This call is being recorded.
All right, folks. Hi, this is Jeremy Shapiro with the Bay Area Mastermind. We're joined here today with Craig Hadley from Listen Up Espanol. And we're going to be talking about internationalizing your product and you know, what the Spanish-speaking market is all about and what the opportunities might be there, what's different from what we're used to, and what we can learn from that. Craig heads up and is the owner of a 1,000-person call center and works with companies to help them expand their already successful English-speaking products to the international market, specifically Spanish-speaking. And the reason I wanted him to join us today is we've had questions around that within the group in the past, and Craig is a good friend and great resource in that space. So, Craig, thank you for joining us today. And if I missed any important notes in your bio, please help me fill that in, and I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Did you see where I was undefeated on Necker Island when wearing the sumo suit? Did you put that in there?
I may have missed that, Craig.
That's one of my proudest moments. You know, is going to Necker on four different occasions and never yet getting beaten in the sumo suit. So
fantastic.
So we're going to talk. I mean, we help people bring products to Mexico. We do a little bit. And starting to do more in Latin America. Our primary claim to fame has been helping people really target the 60-plus million people that are Hispanics who reside in the U.S., which has been a whole other, you know, challenge for people, and it's really not that difficult. And that's been really where we've, for 10 years, taken brands and really shown them how to target. You know, if you go through the Hispanic market, we're outside of Mexico, the U.S. is a country within a country with the Spanish-speaking market. Mexico has over 110 million people who speak Spanish. The U.S. has over 60 million if you count the undocumented. And Colombia is the third largest Spanish-speaking country with only 44 million Hispanics or people who speak Spanish. Spain only has 40 million. Argentina has 40. Peru has 28. Venezuela has 26 million. Chile has 16.5 million people. But it's kind of funny when you look at, you know, how many people in the U.S. speak Spanish and what that opportunity is. And so many companies think that in order to target Hispanics, they've got to go to Mexico. And the truth is, you know, yes, you can do well in going to Mexico and going to Latin America, but there's a lot more to learn there. And I think the natural evolution is, how do you target Hispanics right here in the U.S., and then from there, bring your product to an international level. And when you work with an international company, there's a lot that you've got to know in order to do that. That really complicates it. It took us 5 years, I think, to get the culture that we have in Hermosillo, Sonora, Mexico, that really aligns with U.S. Culture. We tried to sell products in Mexico in our Hermosillo location, and we failed miserably, so we had to open in Mexico City, because there really is a little bit of a different dynamic, and it's different in working with international customers. So I'm going to start really talking about how you target them in the U.S. and what's going on in the internet space and online space in the U.S., and then from there we can add, you know, we can cover some other stuff.
Sounds great.
A lot of this stuff is pretty common knowledge. The Hispanic market is growing. Like in North Carolina, they see the biggest growth in the Spanish market right now. It's places that a lot of people don't think. And kind of the secret, so I've got a lot of data that I can go through, but the biggest thing that I think is really cool about the Spanish market today, 3 years ago, this would be a different conversation. Today, for the Spanish market, search marketing in the Spanish market, retail is up 210%. Telecom is up 107%. Health is up 80%. Skincare, 75%. Food, 70%. Automotive, 65%. Beauty, 65%. So what that means is that there are a lot of Hispanics in the U.S., of these 60 million people. More and more of them are searching for healthcare using Spanish. It's not that they want companies that, you know, that serve the Hispanic market. I think they want companies that actually care about the Spanish market. Because what's interesting is that even though the language that these people use at home, these people, Hispanics, use at home, the language they use at home, 31% use English, 41% are bilingual, and 28% are Spanish. But what's interesting is when they see an ad in Spanish, almost 90% of them are going to the English website. Now, to take it further, 20% of the people that go to the English website are still going to look for an 800 number, and they're going to want to talk to someone in Spanish. But I've got a lot of data, a lot of information that's going to tell you how you want to target people in the Spanish market. But ultimately, you don't have to overthink. Whatever you're doing in English to drive your business today, simply translate your ad to translate your ad. The biggest thing is what you're adding is culture. That means that, we use an example like Cabela's. They've got that guy out there fly fishing. If Cabela's were going to enculturate their ad, they'd have a guy teaching his kids how to fly fish. They'd have his grandmother in the background cooking tortillas over the fire, reading the Bible, maybe holding the rosary. I mean, that would be enculturating your content. And that's a little bit of an extreme example in the healthcare field. If you have the nurse holding the pregnant mother's hand doing the ultrasound, in the Spanish version, you'd have her grandmother holding the rosary, holding her hand, and two kids peeking up over the rail, trying to look at the images and causing the nurse maybe to lose her mind. Again, I know that those might be a little extreme examples, but hopefully you get the idea.
So, Craig, I'm curious. You mentioned about the 800 number on the website. Is this the kind of thing where people dial an 800 number and they, you know, press one for English or oprima número ocho for Spanish? Or is this like a... You detect the language preference and give them a different direct number right to a Spanish-speaking call center.
We've seen companies do both. Some companies put an 800 number for English, an 800 number for Spanish. And what we find is that only about 5% of the Anglo market actually dials the 800 number to talk to somebody in the English market, whereas 20% or so dial for Spanish. Because even though the content's all in English, it's a Hispanics are really trust-oriented, so they'd still want to talk to somebody, at least 20% of them do. So that's where a lot of our business is coming from today, is working in the healthcare market or working in the insurance market or the lead generation market. And ultimately, we'll help people, you know, they just buy some Spanish keywords when they drive that traffic to the website, they leave it in English, and then we become the phone center for the 20% that's going to call after their brand or product is kind of shown online. That's like the 3-second, you know, that's like the 3-minute version of how easy it is to target Hispanics today. The biggest things, if you look at, you know, and we've sold over $500 million in products in the last 3.5 years, it's their behaviors. So everything that Hispanics do online today, the Anglo market follows. They're trendsetters. They follow in about 6 months. So what's interesting is 55% of Hispanics versus 38% of non-Hispanics like to touch and feel a product. 49% Hispanics versus 19% non-Hispanics judge a product by the package. So some of these Amazon brands that are really doing well online with their packaging, they're doing it because Hispanics are trendsetters and kind of leading the way in that area. Social shopping, 37% of Hispanics versus 17%. Of non-Hispanics will reach out to family and friends. 36% of Hispanics versus 18% non-Hispanics share opinions and write reviews. So if you want people to talk about your business, you know, Hispanics are doing it at a higher rate. 48% of Hispanics use social networking versus 31% non-Hispanics.
So Craig, if I can just ask you about that, you know, so yeah, I think we'd all agree that a good product image helps. You know, asking people to socially share helps. Asking people to tell their friends helps. How would you go about those decisions differently, targeting a Hispanic market versus not? Like, if it's beneficial either way, right?
It is beneficial either way. But okay. One of the big things is if you're actually targeting Hispanics with buying the keywords or placing an ad on Facebook that's in the Spanish market, if you're actually doing the targeting with those demographics, what happens is when you only get a small number of reviews, for example, 18% of non-Hispanics write the reviews. Well, if you start getting more Hispanics, 36% write reviews in the Spanish market. So your media dollars end up, like my acquisition fees in the Spanish market are almost half of what they are in the English market. And then with the social sharing and the other contributors, I end up driving my cost per order down over and over again just because of the way the Spanish market operates online.
Got it.
Make sense?
Yeah, no, thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah. The other thing is, like, for example, Hispanics, 45% of parents versus 13% in the non-Hispanic market consider the kid an influencer. So if a child wants something, somebody in the Spanish market is almost four times more likely to allow a child to push them into buying it, which is crazy.
Craig, do you have any good examples, like from some of the clients you've worked with or things you've seen that work well, where they were able to take advantage of one of those big differences, like the 4x more influence from child?
Well, I can tell you that one of the bigger products that we did a lot with was a hair straightener in the beauty category. Beauty categories really work well, skincare, beauty. Nutribullet is a blender, and they buy as much media in Spanish as they do in the English market. And ultimately, our conversion rate in Spanish is higher than it is in the English market, and the shareability rates are better. So Nutribullet is a company that took advantage of that. The Magic Bullet, they're the same company, Capital Brands. Telebrands does the Pocket Hose and the Rabbit TV, and they've used the influence of Hispanics to create a lower CPO in their overall marketing dollars. St. Jude Children's Hospital, the percentage of Anglos who do a one-time donation along with a monthly donation is around 10% that do the one-time donation, and then probably 70 or 80% do the monthly donation. In the Spanish market, we get the 80% on the monthly donation of $20 a month, but when we take phone calls from St. Jude and ask for a one-time donation, 70% of Hispanics do a one-time donation on top of their monthly. So St. Jude takes advantage of really understanding how Hispanics work. Tony and I actually did do a test. We spent $70,000 ourselves on a product called Purifit, which was just a Garcinia product. And I don't really want to go to jail selling Garcinia. So it was more of, it was a good product, but we didn't want to stay in that business. We just wanted to gather data. Well, on Facebook, our cost of acquisition, from marketing from an Anglo versus Hispanic, our cost of acquisition on Facebook was $35 versus $58. So Hispanics, targeting Hispanics was a lot lower. That is also where we had over 20% of the customers who visited our English page from a Hispanic ad picked up the phone and called us. So we were able to lower our cost of acquisition after we added an 800 number, because we didn't do it right away because we wanted to make sure we had that data. The labels were in English. The website, we had an English and a Spanish. However, almost 90% of the people we marketed to in Spanish went to the English version of the website, which was interesting because we weren't doing any marketing. We weren't doing any marketing in English, so we had a separate product brand for acquisition that we compared to our own.
Now, Craig, when you guys are choosing to display an English sales page versus Spanish, how are you determining which page to show a visitor?
What happens is when they come, a lot of websites used to have the ability for you to select the language, and that's why so many people now just go to the English site. Because thanks to Google Translate, translating pages inaccurately, the information over the past 10 years has been historically bad. So now it's a default for someone who speaks Spanish but can understand English to go to the English page because the information is considered to be more accurate and better for them to be able to get it. So ultimately, a lot of sites give them a choice. My recommendation today is don't even bother with a Spanish website unless you're going to go into Mexico or Latin America. So like I said, right now I was just going to start with the U.S. Hispanic market, which is a huge, huge area. Now, what's interesting is if you look at data from once you start getting into data from Univision and some other big Televisa, things like that, you are starting to target the international market. So you do want to have a Spanish web page. And again, it's key that with your Spanish web page, and I, you know, I recommend your English website use acculturation and target. So instead of having, you know, the blonde woman from Utah with the two blonde hair, blue eyed kids, you know, have a Latina mom in there as well as, you know, the other demographics. Cover all the demographics. But if you look at like even mobile search, dentista, you know, the search term dentista, which is dentist, has more than tripled in the last couple of years. Seguros, which is insurance, has more than quadrupled. Abogados, which is attorney, has continued to skyrocket. I've got a bunch of graphs from Mark Lopez, who runs the Hispanic audience for Google, which is from 2015 of June of 2015. So, smartphones, Hispanics are over trending on smartphones and what they do with their smartphone, which is another data point. Is this good information? Is this helpful?
Yeah. Helpful, guys.
Good.
Awesome. You mentioned Craig on the search side. Are you seeing different search habits? Like you mentioned, mobile usage versus desktop, for example, in either Spanish speaking internationally or even Spanish speaking US?
Yes.
Okay.
Most Hispanics couldn't afford a laptop or a PC. You find that in a lot of countries outside of the US. So they ended up skipping right into smartphones, and the smartphone is their laptop. So even in the US Hispanic market, it's like 78%, this is, I'm going to go back a couple of years, 78% had smartphones versus 40% of the non-Hispanic audience. I have more recent data, and those numbers have come closer to each other because, like I said, everything Hispanics do, it's followed by the non-Hispanic audience. It's not the other way around. Most people like do English and then they kind of go into Spanish after. But really, what you do in Spanish is what you should be doing in English 6 months from now. And so I think, yes, English is a bigger market to start there, but then learn how to target Hispanics and then adjust your English campaign every 3 to 6 months based on what's working in your Spanish campaign. This is a simple equation of what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Now, the further south you get, the more likely it is that they only have a smartphone and they don't have a computer. Computers in Mexico, like for that Macintosh computer, that $3,800 MacBook Pro, that's around $7,000 in Mexico with the fees and bringing it in the country. It's even more when you go further south. They don't buy those things. Those things don't get bought in other countries. The Dell computers that are $350, they're over 1,000 in Colombia. So they just buy the smartphones
So
and they
now,
rely
Craig,
on Wi-Fi.
with a smartphone, so if we're looking at a desktop, someone might be on Facebook, click an ad, view a sales page in the browser on their computer, click to buy online or maybe call. From the mobile
Correct.
flow you're seeing, is it more they see the ad on their smartphone, click, and they're viewing a mobile-friendly English language page, and the call to action is call this toll-free number?
So in the Spanish market, if you click on a Spanish ad, you want to set up an English landing page and you would want to have a click to call option on your mobile phone, which is actually very relevant with Apple doing the ad blocking coming up with the iPhones and the computers. It's going to make click to call a much more relevant feature in your marketing going forward because people are going to be blocking those ads and those landing pages, and click to call is probably going to be more prominent as more ad blocking tools start to come into play. So the phones are actually making a bigger comeback, which is good for my business. But yes, to cut it short, I would say yes. Call for and I and the click to call on the mobile phones is call 1-800 what to 123 1234 for Spanish or English. You just have to let them know that there is a Spanish option for them when they call in. There are five things that make your content culturally relevant, which is true of all Hispanics. If you go US Hispanics right down into Latin America, you know, the things that are really important to them in their cultural sensibilities are food, traditions, holidays, family, and religion. Big foodies, everybody in the Latin culture really feels like it's kind of like the U.S. in the 1960s and 70s. It's pretty funny. I love watching Mad Men because it reminds me of what the Hispanic market is now, like today. So all those ads that worked in the 60s and 70s would work in the Spanish market today. But food, traditions, holidays, family, and religion. So that's the type of imaging that you want to have in all your ads.
So that's why, Craig, you mentioned, like in those examples before, the couple camping in the background with father and son fishing with the rosary beads. Like you've hit on all of those at once.
I did, and I was overdoing it a little for emphasis.
Sure.
So.
But great example, though, incorporating all of those. That makes a lot of sense now in that context.
Yeah. Facebook data. If you look at Facebook as a medium to advertise, Hispanics over-index. They have 1.3 times the number of photos uploaded, and there are not as many people in the U.S. Hispanic market as there are in the non-U.S. Hispanic market in the U.S. So they have 1.3 over-index on photos uploaded, 1.3 over-indexing on the comments they make, 1.6 over-indexing on the number of likes, 1.5 on the number of video uploads Hispanics do, 1.5 times over-indexing on the number of check-ins, which is data from Facebook that I was able to grab. Facebook's also got a tool that you can use to target Hispanics that's based on their acculturation rates. Hispanics are dumped into 5 levels of acculturation here in the U.S. Now, if you're targeting Mexico or Colombia or Latin America, they're obviously going to be Hispanic all, you know, Spanish dominant. You know what I mean? But there are 5 levels of acculturation. Facebook, for example, would actually put me down as Hispanic English dominant. So if you selected Hispanic English dominant, I might see your ad. Because I do have people who post on my page in Spanish because of my relationships. I don't speak Spanish, but based on the number of comments I get that are in Spanish, Facebook says, this guy knows some Spanish people. So you can select from 5 different categories. Level 1 being English, you know, really all English, Hispanic that's mostly English, and then all the way down to 5, which is all Spanish. So the groups that you want to select if you're going to market on Facebook and you didn't want to translate your page would be everything but 5. So you want to do 1, 2, 3, and 4 because those are Hispanics that are able to read English. So Facebook, you can actually eliminate almost all the people that would want to go to your Spanish page. YouTube has the same tool. It's owned by Google as well. They just rolled it out in March 2015. And theirs is really based on a lot of younger people who are looking at the bilingual category. So they've got a chef that makes burgers with guacamole and all this other stuff, and he speaks Spanglish, half Spanish, half English, but the young kids love him. They watch that more than they watch TV. So YouTube's a huge, I have the data on the number of times Hispanics over-index on how much YouTube video they watch. It's like 300% more on their behaviors, on how much video they watch online.
So, Craig, one question that's come up from a few of the folks in the group that I'm curious your thoughts around is, you know, when you have a product or service that's converting and working well in the U.S. or a book that's selling, et cetera, how do you know when to start investing a budget and resources in Spanish language ads, imagery, branding, et cetera? Like, what's the point where you make that decision?
Most of our clients today are doing it at the same time. They're launching in English, but they're creating their Spanish content, and usually 30 days after they launched in English, they're launching in Spanish. And sometimes they're doing it exactly the same time.
Is that for folks who are just launching a new product line or new company? Obviously, they're working with you. It's a little biased. They know this, but You know, I imagine you have clients who come to you with an existing offer and say, hey, Craig, is it time for me to expand?
Yeah, and my answer is you probably should have previously. I mean, if you're paying $55 on your nutraceutical for cost of acquisition, and your acquisition fees are $55, if you blend 30, if you spend 30% of your media dollars on targeting Hispanics on Facebook, for example, instead of the full 100% that you're spending targeting Anglos, and for that 30%, your cost of acquisition is $35, your blended acquisition rate now went down to like $45, $46. So doesn't it make sense to have Spanish blended into your marketing right out of the gate, because you could then spend more money on a weekly basis and drive more customers? What's more is Hispanics are sharing more, so if you want to get social shares and social comments on your site, target Hispanics. And if you want to get the people in Mexico, target the U.S. Hispanic market, because that's where all their family still lives. You know, 70% of the U.S. Hispanic market, their families live in Mexico. So people in Mexico are going to start asking, how do we get your product? Well, now you've got to have your website translated to Spanish, but now it's really, I guess the question for me is really, when's it time to expand into Latin America and Mexico?
Yeah.
And I think that's really more of a relevant question, because there you have more to do. In the past, you would have waited 3 to 6 months to go into Spanish because you had to create a Spanish web page. You thought you might need Spanish material alongside of it. Well, that's not true anymore. Now you just got to buy keywords in English and Spanish. So instead of buying dentist and all the words around dentist, you still buy those, but now you buy dentista and all the words in Spanish that are around that as well. It's all you got to do. Drive them to your English page, have an 800 number for them to call somebody who speaks Spanish. And a lot of times, that person's already in your office. You know, you don't need my call center for that in a lot of cases.
What would you say, Craig, are some of the biggest mistakes you see folks make who try and go at this on their own, or, you know, expand to a Spanish-speaking market? Like, what are those pitfalls or gotchas that you've seen folks fall into?
Here's some of my favorite translations gone wrong. So the wildly successful Got Milk campaign from the Dairy Association, when used in Mexico, brought attention because it got translated to, are you lactating? Coors Brewing slogan, turn it loose, when converted to Spanish, means suffer from diarrhea, which is why people drank a lot of orange juice as opposed to Coors. Parker Penn in Mexico wanted its advertisements to parlay, it won't leak in your pocket and embarrass you. Instead, the company thought the word embarazar meant to embarrass, but it actually meant to impregnate. So the ad read, it won't leak in your pocket and make you pregnant. Frank Perdue's line, it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken, in Spanish was, it takes a sexually stimulated man to make a chicken affectionate. Braniff International Airways wanted to highlight fly in leather, but instead the Spanish came out as fly naked.
So a lot of translations gone wrong.
The common mistakes people make is their translation is done not through a culturally relevant, you know, so in Colombia, they, like, every country has their own language. As an example, this is maybe bleepable, but in Colombia, arrecha, to pony arrecha, is a slang that means to make you horny, as an example. Well, arrecha means a lot of things in Mexico that never in a lifetime would mean horny, as an example. I don't know a lot of Spanish, so I'm trying to give you a good relevant example. And this is, of course, my wife's friend saying, you know, say this. I'm like, okay. But it's just, you know, it's in Mexico they say everything about madre, it's mother. Like, I think if you said to pony madre or something, like, it means tastes like shit. Why would mother mean it tastes like shit? It is what it is. It's just one of those slangs. So every country has all these different slangs. Well, if you're going to be relevant in marketing to a demographic in a foreign country, you got to know what the slangs are. So the person who writes your copy has got to come from Colombia. For Colombia, the person that writes your copy in Mexico should be Mexican. The person who, if they're writing copy here in the U.S., should be Mexican, because 70% of the U.S. is Mexican. So you probably want to have a Mexican influence on your translation. So I see a lot of translation coming in incorrectly. And then acculturation, if you're not careful, you know, there's a lot of jokes around other cultures, like, you know, the Mexicans doing the lawn. If you're selling lawn supplies, you don't want to put a bunch of Mexicans out mowing your lawn, because now you're going to offend everybody. Yes, you're culturally relevant, but you've now managed to offend the entire demographic that you're trying to target. So I guess that's another mistake that I see people make, is they think they're being culturally relevant, but it's almost funny that they think that that's not going to offend somebody. And then the translation.
So, Craig, beyond the copy, assuming you got the language, the text dialed in for that country, are there kinds of offers or the way you'd approach a sales letter that tactically you just take differently in one culture to the next?
Yeah, I mean, you got to focus around their family, religion. You know, so let's say you're targeting Mexico. Well, Mexicans love soccer, football, you know, soccer. Puerto Ricans prefer baseball and basketball. So if you're going to target Miami, you might want to, you know, focus on baseball or basketball. There's a Dallas-based pizza chain called Pizza Patron that saw declining sales during the Catholic season of Lent. Well, many of the Hispanic consumers are devout Catholics and don't eat meat on Fridays during Lent, so they adjusted their strategy and increased sales by running specials on vegetarian and meatless pizzas. So that's how they kind of overcame some cultural relevancy.
Is there any difference in, like, pricing models, for example? Like you'd mentioned, when I thought St. Jude is a great example with upfront donations versus ongoing. Does that translate over to product or info sales where there's upfront purchases or ongoing, or price points or structures? Like, how does that vary, if at all?
So in the U.S. market, it works a lot like the U.S. market. So if you're targeting Hispanics in the U.S., they typically is a price point barrier of around $300, $350. We go over that in a lot of cases, but the way we do it is we'll have up to $300 paid today, and then we'll start to delay the bills on the back end. So we'll do, if they wanted an upsell, if they wanted a second blender, for example, or whatever, when there's an upsell, I delay payments by about 45 days. I do a, you know, we're going to send it to you today and we're going to put you on a layaway plan. Hispanics are very trustworthy and honest, but they don't have, and again, it depends. We're testing technology right now called intelligence, and we're actually able to determine how much they can afford before we answer the phone. That's in our call center. That's not going to help with online. But I can tell you that what we've seen before we had this technology is when we hit, you know, $300, we had to delay the bill to get the back end going, and then we try for a one pay after we got the money and tried to discount it by like $100 to get them to pay today. So there's a couple of tools that we used that were successful in the billing. Now, if you get to Mexico, Mexico is different. Now, when you get into Mexico, you're going to get a lower close rate, but you'll get that certain percentage of people, when they say yes, the philosophy in Mexico is to sell them $1,000 worth of stuff. So I saw this bra campaign. The ad was, you know, call now and get six bras for $19.95 or whatever. But when you got them on the phone, you wouldn't let them buy until they spent $200. And the way that it works in Mexico is you call the person, you don't let them buy low. You actually do an outbound call back to them and try to sell them again on a higher price point. And then you try to keep the price point high. And over the course of a week, you beat them into submission and get them to buy a $199 package of bras on a $19.95 ad. It's more used as a lead gen. And then you spend a week establishing a relationship, and about 12% of them will end up buying the $100 or the $100 or $200 bra package. I didn't necessarily believe in that model, but that's what the successful companies down here do. Is they find, they say, no matter what your price point is, only 12% of the people are going to buy. So they feel like if it's $19.95 or $29.95 or $99.95 or $299.95, that only a certain percentage are going to buy. And when they raise the prices, it doesn't drop. So maybe on the $19.95, they'll get 15% to buy instead of 12. But they feel like it's not worth it because they now are giving away the product at a lower price point, and they're not able to get their revenue margins. So Mexico is a little bit different.
Interesting.
It's like Tijuana.
Yeah?
It's like the Hawkers in Tijuana. That's very interesting. Very interesting, Greg.
So, Craig, I guess what services does your company provide besides the call center? Because I'm thinking about this. Okay, I can start to run ads in Spanish, but I don't know how to speak Spanish. I don't know where I'd even start to do that. What do you do? And I mean, where should someone go to kind of get started with this?
What's funny about that, Logan, is you realize I don't speak Spanish either.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I imagine you have a work there to do.
Whatever keywords you have, I mean, I would have my guys in my call center just translate that stuff for you. I would do that for you guys anyway. I wouldn't charge you to do that. We actually do video translations. We can do a 2-minute video translation for, believe it or not, the 2-minute and the 30-minute are really close in price. If you had a 30-minute video that you want to translate it, it's really dependent on the number of voices. So if you had a 2-minute ad with 18 voices in the ad, it might cost $3,500, and a 30-minute with one voice might cost $3,500 to translate the whole thing and to have it, you know, edited and have Spanish video to complement your English. We offer that to a lot of our clients, so we do have translation and do video translations and dubbing. That's something we've done for people. And then, of course, we have a call center with great salespeople and great customer service people. We do have, see now, as the CEO of the company, we've hired a guy to run Mexico for us. His name's Andres. And Andres has been very critical in helping us work with companies who wanted to come into Mexico. And a lot of times, there are distributors in Mexico. There's three major distributors who own all of Mexico. And right now, all three of those companies have given us their phone calls because I was able to outperform their own call centers that they were trying to run internally. And so now I'm actually running in Mexico City the call center that takes the calls for all the big distributors here in Mexico. There's only three of them. There's a Nova and there's two other. I'd have to get their names, but I'm trying not to get tied down the details.
Craig, along those lines, you mentioned you guys work some like nutraceuticals and health related products and all. Regulation wise, have you seen much difference in like what you can say, can't say for health products in Mexico, Colombia, et cetera?
You can get away with more, but I always feel like the best bet is to. I always find that it's easier to over. Disclose details because that's selling, in Mexico, I'm sure if the ad in Spanish said this was endorsed by Jose Rivera, or is he a famous person? Like they have all the ads in the U.S. saying Oprah said this is great, or Dr. Oz. That's all great and all, and I bet, some of our clients probably are still getting away with that, but it's only going to be a matter of time before they really try to protect that demographic as much as they protect the English demographic. So there's less regulation. I can tell you from what I see Innova doing and some of these other companies, there's a lot less regulation. But I think that you could probably do well without having to take any. And I'm sure you're not saying that you want to take extra things, but I'm saying that I think that just best practices and keep it that way and you'll do fine in no matter what country you're in. But yeah, there's less regulation in Mexico and in Colombia and things like that.
Cool.
Health products, nutraceuticals are hard to get distributed in Mexico. The easiest place to get nutraceuticals distributed is Brazil, which is actually not even Spanish, it's Portuguese. I have a lot of friends who distribute nutraceuticals in Brazil.
Craig, how well do informational products sell in Latin America as opposed to the United States?
It was funny. When we first got here 10 years ago, the idea of being an entrepreneur was non-existent. And over 10 years, it slowly but surely caught up. And I have friends now putting on conferences in Mexico. And they're getting sellout audiences. They're getting 10,000 people who want to go and learn about entrepreneurism and learn about, how to build their own business. I think from a timing standpoint, Mexico is just primed from an MLM, direct marketing, informational marketing standpoint. Mexico and Argentina and those countries are doing really well right now. They don't even have libraries. You know, they don't have bookstores here in Mexico. For me to bring Spanish books down, I literally have to order them, have them shipped to my house, put them in a bag, and bring them down. You can't even get books in Mexico.
Sounds familiar, Tom?
Crazy. But that's why information products are doing so well online, because people get not only the book, but they get the information. But this is, in Mexico, you're talking about a culture that doesn't read. I mean, they do read, but they don't read a lot. It's like water is more expensive than beer. So at basketball games, everybody's got like a case of beer. It's harder to buy water. It's crazy.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, certainly if it's got a Coors Light slogan, I can see why.
So in the informational products in the health and wellness industry in Latin America, not in U.S. Hispanics, but if you have a successful informational product in the United States and maybe you migrated into the U.S. Hispanics, are they likely to share that into Latin America, or will you just go straight to Latin America and localize by country?
I'd do both. I mean, I would start in the U.S., get the testimonials in the base of business where it's trusted U.S. product.
Yeah.
And then I would launch in Argentina, for example, where Argentina is really a good market right now. I'd stay out of Venezuela right now. You know, there's a lot of political unrest. Probably not the best place to be working right now. Argentina is a good market for direct response.
Why Argentina rather than Colombia?
Colombia is a great market right now for that. My wife's from Colombia.
Okay. And then if you go into, let's say you have the social media taken care of by U.S. Hispanics, you go into Argentina and Colombia, what do you use for lead gen down there?
Well, a lot of these people just, like, I would move from Facebook to buying some traffic on potentially Univision or Televisa or other areas where Hispanics go. There is a Facebook version of... in Argentina, there's a site that's just like Facebook, but it's all about, it's just Hispanics in Argentina. I forget what it's called. I have it in my notes. But that's in Argentina. They have like a LinkedIn for Hispanics that's, you know, mano to mano or something along those lines. I forget the name of it right now. But there are sites that are just like heavily trafficked sites that we use in the U.S. that are in Argentina or in... So there's a guy that used to work for Mind Valley. His name's Juan, and Juan specializes in Argentina.
Is this Turinga?
Juan, the hell's Juan's last? Juan Margatay, and Juan specializes in Argentinian sales and information products in Argentina, for example. So there's usually an expert, you know, market person in each country that knows how to just knock things out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Is the Argentinian social network site called Turinga? Taringa?
Yeah, that might be one of them. There's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of places. It's the same way you find traffic in the U.S. You just look at where all the traffic's going in Argentina and buy it.
Right. Interesting. Cool. Any other questions, guys, for Craig before we wrap up?
Is there a way of emailing you?
Yeah, I'll get you guys' info. Craig, are you okay if I share email address with folks for follow-up questions?
No, of course, that's fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they can connect to me on Facebook or whatever. I'm pretty good to the answering questions and, you know, doing my thing.
His photos aren't all G-rated.
Craig's not G-rated.
Just beware. Tell the nurse over there that I do wear my underwear on Facebook once.
He does.
Okay, it's all right.
Listen, when I was single, nurses used to be the number one target that used to just go after me all the time. So I want you to be careful. I want you to fall in love. Well, a lot of women do.
He's a heartbreaker. Awesome. Craig, any other closing thoughts for us here today?
Uh,
Besides that wonderful image.
I think I still hear her laughing, so that's good. That is true. You know, when I was doing the dating thing, every time I get like a match.com, somebody reaching out to me or whatever when I was dating, 90% of the women that were reaching out to me were nurses. I'm like, what the hell is it with nurses? Do I look unhealthy and they think they can save me? Or am I really healthy? And, you know?
I think it's the studios, Craig.
What the hell are nurses doing? They're thinking of me like all the time. Can I date anybody besides a nurse? My ex-wife was a nurse. Crazy. All right. No, I don't have any other comments. I'm free for questions, though, if somebody wants to email me directly. Because everybody's got a different challenge, and if somebody has something direct that they want answered, I'll just push them in the right directions. You know, Argentina, I'll send Juan to you. You can talk to Juan directly about Argentina. Mexico, you'd have to talk to Andres, who runs my call center, and Andres will make sure you had all the right connections in Mexico. Colombia, I'll have to figure out who I have in Colombia. You know, there's people everywhere that I've been in contact with that, you know, and we're doing more and more in South America. I'm sorry, Latin America and South America.
Right on.
Cool, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it and jumping through the technical hurdles of international conference calls. I'm so glad we made this happen and you're able to be here with the Bay Area Mastermind. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in a few weeks in Argentina.
All right, man. Cool.
Cool. Thanks, Greg. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.